Chapter 21. Against land invaders, it himself had illimitably invaded the Atlantic and Pacific, and though a sworn foe to human bloodshed, it had in his straight-bodied coat spilled tons upon tons of Leviathan gore. How now in the contemplative evening of his days, the pious builded reconciled these things in the reminiscence, I do not know. But it did not seem to concern him much, and very probably he had long since come to the sage and sensible conclusion that a man's religion is one thing, and this practical world quite another. This world pays dividends. Rising from a little cabin boy in short clothes of the drabbest drab, to a harpooner in a broad shad-bellied waistcoat, from that becoming boat-header, chief mate, and captain, and finally a shipowner, builded, as I hinted before, had concluded his adventurous career by wholly retiring from active life at the goodly age of 60, and dedicating his remaining days to the quiet receiving of his well-earned income. Now, builded, I am sorry to say, had the reputation of being an incorrigible old hunks, and in his sea-going days, a bitter hard taskmaster. They told me in Nantucket, though it certainly seems a curious story, that when he sailed the old Caddagat Whaleman, his crew, upon arriving home, were mostly all carried ashore to the hospital, sore exhausted and worn out. For a pious man, especially for a Quaker, he was certainly rather hard-hearted, to say the least. He never used to swear, though, at his men, they said. But somehow he got an inordinate quantity of cruel, unmitigated hard work out of them. When Bilded was a chief mate, to have his drab-colored eye intently looking at you, made you feel completely nervous, till you could clutch something, a hammer or a marling spike, and go to work like mad, at something or other, never mind what. Indolence and idleness perished before him. His own person was the exact embodiment of his utilitarian character. On his long, gaunt body, he carried no spare flesh, no superfluous beard, his chin having a soft economical nap to it, like the worn nap of his broad-brimmed hat. Such, then, was the person that I saw seated on the transom when I followed Captain Peleg down into the cabin. The space between the decks was small, and there, bolt upright, sat old Bilded, who always sat so, and never leaned, and this to save his coat-tails. His broad brim was placed beside him, his legs were stiffly crossed, his drab vesture was buttoned up to his chin, and spectacles on nose, he seemed absorbed in reading from a ponderous volume. "Bilded," cried Captain Peleg, at it again, "Bilded, eh? Ye have been studying those scriptures, now, for the last 30 years, to my certain knowledge. How far ye got, Bilded?" As if long habituated to such profane talk from his old shipmate, Bilded, without noticing his present irreverence, quietly looked up, and seeing me, glanced again inquiringly towards Peleg. "He says he's our man, Bilded," said Peleg, "he wants to ship." "Dost thee?" said Bilded, in a hollow tone, and turning round to me. "I dost," said I unconsciously, he was so intense a Quaker. "What do ye think of him, Bilded?" said Peleg. "He'll do," said Bilded, eyeing me, and then went on spelling away at his book in a mumbling tone quite audible. I thought him the queerest old Quaker I ever saw, especially as Peleg, his friend and old shipmate, seemed such a blusterer. But I said nothing, only looking round me sharply. Peleg now threw open a chest, and drawing forth the ship's articles, placed pen and ink before him, and seated himself at a little table. I began to think it was high time to settle with myself at what terms I would be willing to engage for the voyage. I was already aware that in the whaling business they paid no wages, but all hands, including the captain, received certain shares of the profits called lays, and that these lays were proportioned to the degree of importance pertaining to the respective duties of the ship's company. I was also aware that being a green hand at whaling, my own lay would not be very large, But considering that I was used to the sea, could steer a ship, splice a rope, and all that, I made no doubt that from all I had heard I should be offered at least the 275th lay, that is, the 275th part of the clear net proceeds of the voyage, whatever that might eventually amount to. And though the 275th lay was what they call a rather long lay, yet it was better than nothing, and if we had a lucky voyage, might pretty nearly pay for the clothing I would wear out on it, not to speak of my 3 years' beef and board, for which I would not have to pay one stiver. It might be thought that this was a poor way to accumulate a princely fortune, and so it was, a very poor way indeed. But I am one of those that never take on about princely fortunes, and am quite content if the world is ready to board and lodge me while I am putting up at this grim sign of the thunder cloud. Upon the whole, I thought that the 275th lay would be about the fair thing, but would not have been surprised had I been offered the 200th, considering I was of a broad-shouldered make. But one thing, nevertheless, that made me a little distrustful about receiving a generous share of the profits was this. Ashore, I had heard something of both Captain Peleg and his unaccountable old crony Bilded, how that they being the principal proprietors of the Pequod, therefore the other and more inconsiderable and scattered owners, left nearly the whole management of the ship's affairs to these two. And I did not know but what the stingy old Bilded might have a mighty deal to say about shipping hands, especially as I now found him on board the Pequod, quite at home there in the cabin, and reading his Bible, as if at his own fireside. Now while Peleg was vainly trying to mend a pen with his jackknife, old Bilded, to my no small surprise, considering that he was such an interested party in these proceedings, Bilded never heeded us, but went on mumbling to himself out of his book, "Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth..." "Well, Captain Bilded," interrupted Peleg, "what do you say, what lay shall we give this young man?" "Thou knowest best," was the sepulchral reply. "The 777th wouldn't be too much, would it? Where moth and rust do corrupt, but lay, indeed, thought I, and such a lay, the 777th. Well, old Bilded, you are determined that I, for one, shall not lay up many lays here below, where moth and rust do corrupt." It was an exceedingly long lay that, indeed, and though from the magnitude of the figure it might at first deceive a landsman, yet the slightest consideration will show that, though 777 is a pretty large number, yet, when you come to make a TEENTH of it, you will then see, I say, that the 777th part of a farthing is a good deal less than 777 gold doubloons. And so I thought at the time. "Why, blast your eyes, Bilded," cried Peleg, "thou dost not want to swindle this young man, he must have more than that." 777th, again said Bilded, without lifting his eyes, and then went on mumbling, "Or where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." "I am going to put him down for the 300th, said Peleg, "do ye hear that, Bilded? The 300th lay, I say." Bilded laid down his book, and turning solemnly towards him said, "Captain Peleg, thou hast a generous heart, but thou must consider the duty thou owest to the other owners of this ship, widows and orphans, many of them, and that if we too abundantly reward the labors of this young man, we may be taking the bread from those widows and those orphans." "The 777th lay, Captain Peleg." "Thou, Bilded!" roared Peleg, starting up and clattering about the cabin. "Lastly, Captain Bilded, if I had followed thy advice in these matters, I would afore now had a conscience to lug about that would be heavy enough to founder the largest ship that ever sailed round Cape Horn." "Captain Peleg," said Bilded steadily, "thy conscience may be drawing 10 inches of water, or 10 fathoms, I can't tell, but as thou art still an impenitent man, Captain Peleg, I greatly fear lest thy conscience be but a leaky one, and will in the end sink thee foundering down to the fiery pit, Captain Peleg." Fiery pit. Fiery pit. Ye insult me, man. Past all natural bearing, ye insult me. It's an all-fired outrage to tell any human creature that he's bound to hell. Flukes and flames. Builded, say that again to me, and start my soul bolts. But I'll swallow a live goat with all his hair and horns on. Out of the cabin, ye canting, drab-colored son of a wooden gun, a straight wake with ye. As he thundered out this, he made a rush at Builded, but with a marvelous oblique, sliding celerity, Builded for that time eluded him. Alarmed at this terrible outburst between the two principal and responsible owners of the ship, and feeling half a mind to give up all idea of sailing in a vessel so questionably owned and temporarily commanded, I stepped aside from the door to give egress to Builded, who, I made no doubt, was all eagerness to vanish from before the awakened wrath of Peleg. But to my astonishment, he sat down again on the transom very quietly, and seemed to have not the slightest intention of withdrawing. He seemed quite used to impenitent Peleg and his ways. As for Peleg, after letting off his rage as he had, there seemed no more left in him, and he too, sat down like a lamb, though he twitched a little, as if still nervously agitated. Hugh, he whistled at last, he squall's gone off to leeward, I think. Builded, thou used to be good at sharpening a lance, mend that pen, will ye? My jackknife here needs the grindstone. That's he, thank ye, Builded. Now then, my young man, Ishmael's thy name, didn't he say? Well then, down ye go here, Ishmael, for the 300th lay. Captain Peleg, said I have a friend with me who wants to ship too, shall I bring him down tomorrow? To be sure, said Peleg. Etch him along, and we'll look at him. What lay does he want? Groaned Builded, glancing up from the book in which he had again been burying himself. Oh, never ye mind about that, Builded, said Peleg. Has he ever whaled at any? Turning to me. Killed more whales than I can count, Captain Peleg. Well, bring him along then. And, after signing the papers, off I went, nothing doubting but that I had done a good morning's work, and that the Pequod was the identical ship that Yojo had provided to carry Queequeg and me round the Cape. But I had not proceeded far, when I began to bethink me that the captain with whom I was to sail yet remained unseen by me, though, indeed, in many cases, a whale ship will be completely fitted out, and receive all her crew on board, ere the captain makes himself visible, by arriving to take command. For sometimes these voyages are so prolonged, and the shore intervals at home so exceedingly brief, that if the captain have a family, or any absorbing concernment of that sort, he does not trouble himself much about his ship in port, but leaves her to the owners till all is ready for sea. However, it is always as well to have a look at him before irrevocably committing yourself into his hands. Turning back, I accosted Captain Peleg, inquiring where Captain Ahab was to be found. And what dost thou want of Captain Ahab? It's all right enough, thou art shipped. Yes, but I should like to see him. But I don't think thou wilt be able to at present. I don't know exactly what's the matter with him, but he keeps close inside the house, a sort of sick, and yet he don't look so. In fact, he ain't sick. But no, he isn't well either. Anyhow, young man, he won't always see me, so I don't suppose he will he. He's a queer man, Captain Ahab, so some think, but a good one. Oh, thou'lt like him well enough. No fear, no fear. He's a grand, ungodly, godlike man, Captain Ahab. Doesn't speak much, but when he does speak, then you may well listen. Marquis, be forewarned. Ahab's above the common, Ahab's been in colleges, as well as among the cannibals, been used to deeper wonders than the waves, fixed his fiery lance in mightier, stranger foes than whales. His lance, aye, the keenest and the surest, that out of all our isle. Oh, he ain't Captain Builded, no, and he ain't Captain Peleg, he's Ahab, boy, and Ahab of old, thou knowest, was a crowned king. and a very vile one. When that wicked king was slain, the dogs, did they not lick his blood? Come hither to me, hither, hither, said Peleg, with a significance in his eye that almost startled me. Ookie, lad, never say that on board the Pequod. Never say it anywhere. Captain Ahab did not name himself. 'Twas a foolish, ignorant whim of his crazy, widowed mother, who died when he was only a 12-month old. And yet the old scout Histig, at Gayhead, said that the name would somehow prove prophetic. And, perhaps, other fools like her may tell thee the same. I wish to warn thee. It's a lie. I know Captain Ahab well. I've sailed with him as mate years ago. I know what he is, a good man, not a pious, good man, like Bilded, but a swearing good man, something like me, only there's a good deal more of him. I know that he was never very jolly, and I know that on the passage home, he was a little out of his mind for a spell, but it was the sharp shooting pains in his bleeding stump that brought that about, as anyone might see. I know, too, that ever since he lost his leg last voyage by that accursed whale, he's been a kind of moody, desperate, moody, and savage sometimes. But that will all pass off. And once for all, let me tell thee and assure thee, young man, it's better to sail with a moody good captain than a laughing bad one. So goodbye to thee, and wrong not Captain Ahab, because he happens to have a wicked name. Besides, my boy, he has a wife, not three voyages wedded, a sweet, resigned girl. Think of that. By that sweet girl, that old man has a child. Hold ye then there can be any other hopeless harm in the hab? No, no, my lad. Stricken, blasted, if he be, a hab has his humanities. As I walked away, I was full of thoughtfulness. What had been incidentally revealed to me of Captain Ahab, filled me with a certain wild vagueness of painfulness concerning him. And somehow, at the time, I felt a sympathy and a sorrow for him, but for I don't know what, unless it was the cruel loss of his leg. And yet I also felt a strange awe of him, but that sort of awe, which I cannot at all describe, was not exactly awe. I do not know what it was, but I felt it. And it did not disincline me towards him, though I felt impatience at what seemed like mystery in him, so imperfectly as he was known to me then. However, my thoughts were at length carried in other directions, so that for the present dark Ahab slipped my mind. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.